طفلة تمتطيه قوس قزح، طفلة.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly broadcast of news, analysis, commentary, and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's continuing occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program features the Palestinian narrative, the Palestinian voice, that is too often missing in the presentation of news and analysis in the mainstream media. This Week in Palestine was created by Sharif Fahm and is continued in his memory. This is John Roberts. Before we get into our feature presentation, I want to remind you that tomorrow, Monday, March 22nd, is World Water Day. The Alliance for Water Justice in Palestine is marking the day with a special virtual celebration webinar they are calling Water, Health, and Human Rights, Marking World Water Day from the U.S. to Palestine. The keynote speaker is Congressional Representative Rashida Tlaib of Michigan, who sponsored in Congress the Emergency Water is a Human Right Act. To register for the 7 p.m. webinar, go to waterjusticeinpalestine.org, all one word, waterjusticeinpalestine.org. Today we feature a conversation with Palestinian journalist and resident of Gaza, Wafa Ali Aloudani. She writes for the Palestine Chronicle and Middle East Monitor, among other publications, reporting on the horror of living in besieged Gaza. The conversation is on a podcast with Miko Peled, one of the major Israeli voices extolling the Palestinian narrative throughout the world.
Welcome to another episode of the Miko Peled podcast. This is your host, Jamil. On this episode, Miko spoke with Wafat Ali Aloudani, a Gaza-based Palestinian journalist, manager of the El Thoraya Institution for Media, a youth group organizer, founder of the Palestinian Eve Network, and an activist for Palestine. Wafat is also a mother of three children and lives in Gaza, Palestine, which has been the target of an aggressive, terrifying military assault on alleged military targets in Gaza. These are targets which have been easily debunked by independent journalists working on the ground. So this daily assault in Gaza includes Navy, tank, artillery, and airstrikes that have killed and injured the population, as well as destroyed key city resources, including a power plant. And this has made life for Gazans even more precarious and even more dire. Gaza is a coastal strip of 2 million residents who've basically been under an illegal and brutal blockade since at least 2007. And there's one infamous quote from a former Israeli military official, and he said, "We'll just bomb them again and keep bombing them every 4 years, like mowing the grass." So this is the reality that Gazans have been dealt at the hands of an out-of-control Israeli war-loving regime. But today's guest, Wafat, was featured alongside another fellow Gazan activist, a gentleman named Ahmed Abu Artema, in a video webinar that was hosted by Miko Peled called Gaza's Past, Present, and Future. And I just highly recommend that all of you check out that webinar if you haven't already. You can find the video at mikopeled.com under the webinar archives section, but you can also listen to it in podcast form if you just go back a few episodes. So in this conversation, Miko spoke with Wafat direct from Gaza, and they spoke to really discuss the latest string of military violence that's happening. They also wanted to discuss the facts on the ground as it pertains to these supposed military targets that Israel keeps referencing. They also got into the truth about these incendiary balloons which Israel seems so threatened by. And the other thing that they really spoke quite a bit about was what raising a family is like under such horrible conditions, including talking about some of the collective trauma that's experienced by Gazan youth and by their families. So without further ado, here is the conversation between Miko Peled and Wafat Ali Aloudaini.
Okay, Wafat, thank you for joining me again. This is not the first time that we've been talking, and I appreciate your time joining me from Gaza to discuss the situation in Gaza. I want to get right to what is happening on the ground. Over the last couple of weeks, Israeli forces have been bombing, I think, every night or almost every night, and there's no mention of this whatsoever in any of the media outlets that I see. Obviously not the corporate media, but not even the more progressive media is discussing this, showing this, talking about this, as though Gaza doesn't exist. And Israel claims on its social media outlets, the IDF and the different Israeli politicians and members of the Israeli government, that Israel is attacking military targets, military bases in the Gaza Strip. So you are a journalist. You are in Gaza. You've been reporting, providing excellent reporting from Gaza. And I wanted to ask you, what are these bases? What is Israel actually attacking? Israel says it's attacking bases, military bases in the Gaza Strip, as though there was some, enormous military presence there. Can you tell us what Israel is actually attacking and has been attacking over the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, well, firstly, I would like to thank you so much for having me again in your podcast. And indeed, for nearly the past 2 weeks, Israel started bombing the Gaza Strip after actually the Palestinian youth here decided to release incendiary balloons into Israel. And actually, those Palestinian youth started to launch these incendiary balloons into Israel just to put a pressure on the Israeli government in order to commit to the agreements that was between Israel and the Palestinian resistance here, because the condition here in Gaza regarding the Israeli siege that is imposed that has been imposed on Gaza since 2006. Actually, these days were the most difficult days for the Palestinians here in Gaza. So that's why the Palestinian youth here in Gaza decided to launch these incendiary balloons in order to shed the light on the suffering that they are going through, and in order also to put the pressure on the Israeli government to commit to the agreements that were signed between them and the Palestinian resistance. So after that, the occupation forces, as they said, they responded to these incendiary balloons by bombing several targets here in Gaza. And they bombed agricultural lands, they bombed the observation posts, they bombed resistance sites. But all of these things, they just responded to the incendiary balloons by the deadly missiles or the deadly rockets in Gaza, and caused fear among the children, caused fear among the women. And some of the Palestinian houses, actually, because those rockets are so powerful, that's why so many of the Palestinian houses got partly damaged because of the massive explosions. And indeed, nearly 7 Palestinians got injured during these attacks. And actually, after nearly 14 days of bombing, nearly every night they bombed Gaza, and then they closed all the borders. They prevented the fuel to enter in the Gaza Strip, and that's why the only power plant here in Gaza has been shut down. completely, and the people who are under lockdown due to the coronavirus outbreak, they only have 3 hours of electricity, and sometimes they don't have water for nearly 2 or 3 days. Yeah.
I want to stop you because I want to talk about all these things one at a time. These are really, really important points that you're making here. But I want to kind of dissect them one at a time, and I want to talk about all. So I want to go back to, you know, the way Israel describes it is as though there are these enormous military bases in Gaza. You said something about resistance targets. What does that mean when you say the resistance targets? Are there these military bases like Israel describes?
It's you know, actually the Israeli propaganda, when they say that the military sites or stuff, the people may imagine that we have the most powerful weapons here in Gaza. Actually, it's just very empty lands with the Palestinian resistance here used to get to training, you know, and the stuff. It just, you know, it's nothing, you know, comparing to the powerful.
Because I think it's important to mention. There's never been a military. Palestinians have never had an army, and certainly in Gaza, there's never been a military force. There's never been a tank, or a helicopter, or a military plane. You know, so this impression that the Israeli propaganda puts out as though they are attacking military bases. Really, they're attacking open fields, and you said something about the strength of the explosions is so great that it's actually damaging homes and injuring people as well. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, actually, you know that they used actually to bomb Gaza at night, and while all of the people here just sleep. And most of the, all of the children and women just sleep here at night. Actually, these bombings, these massive explosions that the Israeli rockets cause, these rockets indeed cause damage to some of the Palestinian houses. And indeed, one pregnant woman got injured, and 3 children. Among those who got injured, they are all of those who got injured. All of them are just civilians. They were just sleeping at their homes, and then they got shocked because of the massive explosion while they were sleeping. And then, of course, these houses and actually for the Palestinian houses are the houses are so simple, and any massive explosion will cause damage to these houses. And
can you talk a little bit about what part of Gaza was actually, were they bombing Gaza City, were they bombing in the north, were they bombing refugee camps in the south, where exactly were they attacking?
Actually, they attacked across the Gaza Strip. They attacked Jabalia. They attacked the middle area, Rafah, Khan Yunis. Nearly all of the areas here in Gaza, you know, got bombed by the Israeli water plans. So you can imagine that. The Israeli drones are above the Gaza sky, and they can just choose any target, and then they target the people or the sites. They said that terror sites or stuff, and then they cause fear and panic among the people.
You can imagine. I mean, we can't imagine sitting. In a place where you don't, we're not used to this kind of violence and these sorts of assaults, the bombing, the noises, the drones, the ongoing sounds must be terrifying for children, must be terrifying for families, for mothers and parents, not really knowing which house is going to be bombed or which house is going to be destroyed as a result of a bombing of another house. So, I mean, this reality is a horrifying reality just to even hear these explosions and hear the sounds. Am I wrong?
Exactly, exactly. You know, for my own experience here, I have three children in my house, and I just spent all the nights just fear that whenever there is a massive explosion, I'll be near to them, because they will, of course, screaming and crying. And this thing indeed happened with me, with my little child. Actually, there was suddenly a massive explosion. It was so near to my house that I felt that my house was shaking, you know. And then my little child, you know, just woke up and crying. And then he is only 5 years old, but he was crying so bad because he said that I what is this sound? And you know, he started to tell me that he feels so afraid. And then he hugged me all the night, and he told me that I don't want to sleep alone. I want to be with you. And then all the night, and the second night, he was only just, you know, staying beside me, because he said that I hear the drones over me. So maybe in any time they are going to bump us or bump anything beside us. So this thing actually, and I'm not talking only about my children. I'm sure that there are so many thousands of stories are like my son. And I hear some of my colleagues, my friends, my neighbors, and they told me that their children do not go to sleep because they hear that there are drones and warplanes above their heads. So they feel afraid.
How old are your other children?
I have 11 months and 3 months, and no, 3.5 months, and 5.5 months. Sorry, I have 11 month daughter and 4 years old son, and my eldest son is nearly 5 years and a half or 6 years old.
Wow. So the youngest one is only 11 months.
Yeah, 11 months, yeah.
Wow. So, you know, when they talk about when, not that they report much about Gaza, but when anything is reported about Gaza, the human factor is never mentioned. They create this impression that there are these terror bases, and then there's the Israeli army, and as though this is kind of a war zone, but it's really not a war zone. This is a heavily populated area with many, many children, with families who try to raise their children in their homes, and the Israeli bombing is a constant factor. The fear, the noise, the trauma, it's a constant factor in the lives of Palestinian children. And this is not something that is ever or rarely discussed. I mean, certainly not in the media. And it's an incredibly important part, I think, because this is exactly the terrorism part. This is how Israel is terrorizing Palestinians in Gaza. It's this reality that is the terrorism. It's not just the bombing, but it's all the things that go around it.
Exactly.
That is what this is the definition of terrorism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, actually, you are completely right. And they feel whenever they target or they tell the ministry media that they are bombing Gaza, they imagine that there is no human beings here and they don't deserve to live like other human beings. And I don't know, maybe they think that there are animals here and they deserve to die and this stuff. We are not sure. And actually, for there is something I remembered during these bombings. There was a video of a father. He was videoing the massive explosion. He saw a smoke, and then he tried to film this thing. And his son was beside him. And this thing, actually, this video went viral on Facebook. And he tried to comfort his son, telling him just calm down. And his son told him, please, Dad, protect me. I don't want to die. And this actually heartbreaking. And I never, and we didn't hear it in the ministry media or in another the other media. This young child, he just fears to die. He asked his father to protect him from this deadly attack. He thought that he is going to die because of these massive explosions. And then in the media, the Israelis say that they are bombing terrorist sites or stuff. Yeah. So what about those people, the civilians and the families, the children, women? Most of the people here in Gaza, most of the population here are children and youth. So,
So let me ask you, you mentioned the incendiary balloons. Now, around the Gaza Strip, which of course is an artificial creation that was created as a result of the Zionist occupation of Palestine, but all around the Gaza Strip and throughout the Negev and the southern part of Palestine, there are many, many Israeli colonies, Israeli settlements, farming communities, and so on, which have all been built on the lands of people who are now, many of them are now, if not most of them, are now locked up in the Gaza Strip as refugees. So really, their lands and their water and everything is outside of the Gaza Strip. It's where these settlers are now living and thriving, and the standard of living of Israelis in that part of the country is very, very high, is very, very good. So describe this whole incendiary balloon thing. How does it work? What are they doing? Talk to me. Can you describe it for us? How does it work? And what is it? And who are these youth? I mean, are they groups? Are they organized? Is it just a bunch of friends? Can you just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, of course. Before that, I want to update this thing. Indeed, before like a few days, there was agreement between the Palestinian resistance here and Israel, and this deal was mediated by Qatar and Egypt. So there was a ceasefire agreement between Palestinians and Israelis. So right now there is no incendiary balloons launched into Israel, and there is no bombing here in Gaza because of this agreement. The agreement that is between them just to open the crossing and the sea again, but not completely, just partly. And about the incendiary balloons, actually, these are just, balloons, and then they use stuff to blow up, and then they plant like a bomb on it, they plant something on it to make it fly, and then cause fire in some of the fields. Actually these incendiary balloons caused fire to some of the fields in the Israeli side. It has nothing to do with, losing lives or stuff, just burning like fields in order to shed the lights on their suffering, because the suffering that the Palestinians here in Gaza are going through is doubled like millions of times than what this fire caused. And it is, this thing is an initiative by Palestinian youth revolutionists. And the resistance here actually protect them, because they allow them to work, and then whenever the Israelis target them or stuff, They said that if the Israeli drones target those youth or kill them, we will respond to this thing, because this is a popular resistance, and everybody knows that this kind of incendiary balloons is considered a popular resistance, and the Palestinian youth here use it just as a way to help in breaking the siege that is imposed on Gaza since a long time.
It sounds like it's working. In other words, I mean, if Israel swears they will never negotiate, and then of course they do sit down and negotiate because they want to stop this. Now you talked about the fuel, and one of the things that Israel used against the people of Gaza is denying fuel. So fuel was, they were not able to bring in fuel for a very long time, which impacts electricity, which impacts hospitals, which is not only people's day-to-day life, but of course hospitals and so on. Can you talk a little bit about that, please?
Yeah, we used to this thing since nearly 2006. The Israelis, whenever there is, they feel anger of Palestinians here in Gaza, they just close the crossing, and then they prevent the fuel from entering Gaza. And actually, once they bombed the electricity company generator, they bombed it. And until now, the electricity or the only power plant, they still suffer from this thing because they don't have a fourth generator to work on full, you know, because only we have 8 hours a day, so we never have 24 hours of electricity. Because the Israeli forces bombed the fourth generator of the power plant. And actually, imagine life without fuel. It means that the power plant will shut off, and only very few hours, 2 or 3 hours a day. And imagine how the hospitals are gonna work without fuel. So many of the companies closed their doors, not from newly recently, actually from a long time. They just close their doors, and so many lose their only livelihood because the company or the factories that they used to work on them, they were just shut down because of the lack of fuel and many things. So many things actually affected these companies due to the Israeli siege on Gaza.
And what about the situation with the water? You mentioned the water too, Mafa.
Yeah, and you know that the fuel or the power plant, the water, in order to come to the houses, the Palestinian houses, they need generators, and these generators, due to the electricity, the long hours of electricity cut, so these generators didn't work, and then the people just spend like days without without water. And really, I myself, you know, many times we just suffered from the shortage of water. There is no water at all. And sometimes we buy the water from, we just buy water from outside, not from the water that is supposed to be in our houses. And
I don't understand. Let me drop you.
Water so difficult.
Wafa, you have 3 children. Yeah. So what do you do if there's no water supply? I mean, you have 3 children. Obviously, that, you know, we take for granted that if a child needs a bath or needs a, well, you need to cook or you, or something, it, we take for granted, you go and you turn the water on. So if there's no water supply, because we know the water in Gaza is not fit for drinking, so you need to, you need special arrangement for water anyway, and even that is not available. Talk a little bit more about what you do and how does it work when you have a family with children and there's a problem, a serious problem with water supply. What do you do?
Actually, as you said, it's so challenging. So it's really very bad when you don't, when you don't have water at your home, when you have like children. That, you know, it's, we are in summer and it's so hot here, and we know we need like in every single minute we need to, them to wash hands, we need them to go to the bath, to have shower and stuff. So all of these things were just we felt at the at that time I felt that I am in not in the 20th century. I feel that I live in the old ages, where we find, we are trying to find like any way to bring water. And indeed, we just many times we bought clean water from outside, you know. But for me, you know, I have the ability to buy the clean water and then fill my the water and then start using to use them.
What do you mean you buy water from the outside? What does that mean? What does that mean? What do you mean you buy water from the outside?
You know that over than 90% or 95% of the water here in Gaza, they are not clean. We, since long time, we used to buy clean water in order to drink, and then we use the other water just to wash the dishes and wash our clothes and the stuff at home. And whenever we want to drink, we just buy this clean water. This is the problem, you know. And you know, this is because of the Israeli. This is because of because of many things, actually, due to the Israeli siege on Gaza. Many things got affected, including the water. So nearly, as I said before, nearly over than 95% is not is not clean, and the people shouldn't use this water like to drink on it, to drink it. You know, this is what I was saying. We bought water just to use it for in the kitchen, to use it in the bathroom and the stuff.
So what do people do? What about people? What about people who don't have the means to buy water? Water is not cheap.
For the people who actually don't have, so many people cannot buy this clean water, but they used to. There is something. They just go for for places. That is so far from their houses, in order to bring to fill their bottles, to fill their bottles of clean water. In some areas, some of the areas, you know, the poor areas, indeed, there is محطة التحلية.
محطة إيش؟
التحلية. تحلية المياه.
What, where they purify water? To stations where they purify the water?
Yeah. It's just for the poor areas, and they the people who cannot buy these the water, the clean water, they just go for for another area in order to fill only a few bottles of water and then go back to their families and use this water.
My goodness. I hope and again, I think it's incredible that... I'm sorry? Please,
do you
go
want
ahead.
Me to, do you... Do you understand what I was saying?
Yes, of course. So like I said when we started, none of this is really being reported. Over the last 2 weeks, even the bombings themselves, the vicious attacks on Gaza have not been reported. And even when they are reported, when there is a bombing that is being reported, it's very superficial. It doesn't talk about the suffering of the people. It doesn't talk about the ongoing terrorism that Israel is placing upon the Palestinians in Gaza, because the siege and the life in the Gaza Strip is an ongoing day-to-day terrorist attack by Israel, even without the bombing, the siege itself, the reality in Gaza. You know very well, the United Nations announced several years ago that by 2020, the Gaza Strip would be uninhabitable. I don't think the Gaza Strip was ever inhabitable. But did you notice something change in 2020, other than COVID, of course, and we'll talk about COVID. I want to talk about COVID too in just a minute. But they kept saying by 2020, the life in Gaza will be uninhabitable. But of course, they do nothing to change it. So has something different about 2020 than from 2019 or 2008 or 2014 or any other of the years, and you're younger than me, so I remember things that have been happening in Gaza probably even before you. But is anything special about 2020 other than COVID in terms of the life in Gaza being uninhabitable?
Yeah, I'm just wondering that most of the time they say that, last year they said that when in 2020, Gaza will be uninhabitable. They didn't do anything to help the people of Gaza. And then we are on August 2020, and nothing changed. Even the people of Gaza, suffer the most this year during the COVID-19 as well. And due to the Israeli policy or the tightening of the siege these days, and of course the COVID-19 outbreak here in Gaza, actually it doubled the situation here, because Gaza is considered the most densely populated area in the world. So talking about this thing with COVID-19 and with water shortage and so much poverty, so many poor people here who cannot buy you cannot buy things to protect themselves from this COVID-19. And of course, things are the worst here in Gaza. And since nearly 14 days, Gaza is under lockdown, under curfew. Nobody can go out. Or all of the schools, universities, the organizations, and everything is closed, even the markets and stuff, because the Ministry of Health here wants to curb the virus, as they said. So they prevent the people to go outside and and gather with each other. So this thing is so challenging for the Ministry of Health that indeed they are on the brink of collapse, or even they are collapsed indeed.
So what about the schools? I mean, you have two of your children are probably at an age where they can go to kindergarten or school. So what is happening with the schools?
Actually, before a month, there was schools and kindergarten, but just before 14 days, everything was shut down and nothing right now, and nothing is opened, and they are just still at home. All of the students, the children are at home because of the lockdown and the closure of everything in Gaza.
So there's no school. So the kids are home.
No. Yeah, yeah. All of the children at home. You know, and imagine with just very few hours of electricity and with this hot weather, and you know, it's really very, very bad here. You know, the people outside just, you know, they are under lockdown, but they enjoyed the electricity and the internet all of the time and the stuff. And then they feel bored of their condition. And here, comparing to the people of Gaza who do not have all of these access, so it is so devastating, you know, to see that the people who actually... who suffer the most, and then they do not get a mention in the media, and at the end they just accuse them of being terrorists and being a threat to a democratic state or stuff. It's really very bad, you know. There is no injustice here.
Yeah.
And going back to the COVID-19, we right now we have nearly 800 cases here in Gaza, some in refugee camps and other in the middle of towns. So the ministries here, they just impose a curfew or lockdown. Since they announced the four cases in community, and still right now the lockdown is still going on and nothing has changed, but the cases, the number of cases are rising, and we have 7 people died of this virus so far. But for the people who do not know about the COVID-19 and when did it come to Gaza, actually last March, the Ministry of Health announced the 2 cases in Gaza for 2 people who came from outside, not from Gaza. Then they had a procedure to make quarantine centers or quarantine facilities to put anyone who came from outside in these quarantine centers for 21 days, and then if he or she is positive, then they quarantine him or her. And for others who are negative, they just go back to their family and gather again with their family. So for 7 months, we can say that they can, for 7 months, they can could curb the virus, and none of the cases were registered here in the middle of Gaza. But just recently, before 14 hours or starting from this month, they announced the 4 cases here in Gaza. And they said that it is for a woman who came from Erez Crossing. She went with her sick daughter to get a treatment outside Gaza. So she went out through Erez Crossing, that is controlled by Israel. and they didn't allow her to enter, but they took her papers and the stuff, and they talked with her, and then she spent like a few hours in this checkpoint, and then she get back to her home, and then she gathered with her families, and then the second day they called her to come to enter this Erez crossing, and then to go treating her daughter, and then she discovered that she caught the virus and she is positive with the virus, and after that they examine her family here in Gaza, they discovered that her family, four of her family, are infected with this virus. And then we discovered that this virus is in Gaza again.
So they talk about, social distancing and you need water to wash your hands all the time. Of course, we know that Gaza is, like you said, one of the most crowded places, heavily populated places in the world. And Israel is depriving the healthcare institutions from having the needs, the supplies that they need to take care of this, and is denying the people in Gaza the very basic needs like water and electricity, which of course, without which they cannot protect themselves. And again, like I said, it's so crowded, and especially now when it's so hot, so people really don't have a lot of option. And I think it's actually quite remarkable that, relatively speaking, when you have 2 million people in such difficult conditions, it's quite remarkable that they did not spread anymore. And that's probably because people there are doing an excellent job protecting themselves with the little means that they have.
You have been listening to Gazan journalist Wafa Ali Aludani on a podcast produced by Miko Peled. And that is all we have time for this week. Thank you for listening to This Week in Palestine, a weekly feature of Truth and Justice Radio. You'll find us here every week at the same time and same place on your radio dial. You can also stream us live on your computer at wzbc.org. To listen to our permanent archive, to hear any of our past broadcasts, go to truthandjusticeradio.org, all one word, and click on This Week in Palestine Archive. This archive was developed and is maintained by our colleague, Stan Robinson. We thank you for your time, and we hope you will join us again next week for another edition of This Week in Palestine. This is John Roberts, wishing you a good morning. خيام